Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yaela Shadarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about how to lead a country in the spirit of unity. Sometimes, here in Israel and also around the world, we reach a state of a political tie between the political blocks, and we have to build something common in order to lead the nation forward. We want to understand, how should it work? Be with us, Yael, please. Yeah, we're talking about the unity of the nation, of leadership, and in theory, we'd all like for it to happen. But in practice, we see that different political blocks pull in different directions. What really interests them is money, what am I getting out of it, and so on. And we'd like to understand, how should all of it work in the spirit of true unity? And the first question that I'd like to start with is, what should a leadership of unity look like? As it says, that just like their faces are different, so are their desires and thoughts, and in general, there's nothing about one person that's similar to another. And therefore, we understand that there is no unity, and directly, there can be no unity, meaning that people will be similar, and from that, they'll come to unity. No, it doesn't work that way. And also, in a family. Even though that a man and a woman meet, and they have some kind of attraction toward each other, this attraction isn't something exalted in any way, but it's hormones. A normal attraction, what we call love. That each of them loves himself, and each understands that by using the other, I'll be able to fulfill my own desire. So, if there's what we call chemistry between them, that each of them understands that it's good for them to be with other person, because by that, I can delight myself. Then they're attracted to each other, they build a family, and they continue with life, as we know it. But really, life, like we see from life itself, is entirely built on concessions. Only concessions. That on the one hand, the calculation that I make is that I want to be with this person, otherwise I'll have to get divorced. So I want to be with that person. Why? Because we have children, we have a home, we have common property, habits, many things that already tie us together. This is on the one hand. And on the other hand, we have already learned in our common mutual life that in life you have two egoists that in some way keep their distance from each other, meaning what? That I don't get too much in your space and you don't get too much in my space, but that we're in some kind of game, a kind of dance with each other, trying to do what's pleasant to the other person, and trying not to do things that might offend or hurt the other person, and then this is called that love covers all crimes. That really, we have plenty of disagreements, but we skip over them. We rise above them. There is a very important matter here called play. That I really all the time have to consider the extent to which it's worthwhile benefiting my partner in order for him or her to benefit me in return. And this is how we understand what's beneficial for each of us, and we try doing what's beneficial for the other person, for my partner. There is the matter of habit here, goodwill. There's real acting involved here, like theater, each with his own ego and his own convenience. And this is how we get along. For this, we need lots of intellect, emotion, consent, understanding, and mainly, concessions. When we do these things in a family, then it's clear to us that otherwise we won't be able to exist. And nonetheless, we have common property and children and everything, and we're growing older, so what? We'll start it all over again, and what's going to happen the second and third time? And those that do it, where do they have the desire to start it all over again from? The optimism that I'll succeed. I didn't really see that happen. The thing is that the second or third time that they go into a family relationship, they understand that things aren't going to be better, they're going to be the same, or even worse. So there are none as wise as the experienced. So they add their experience and wisdom to this new relationship. And then what follows is that as if the next family they build is one that they can stand. But it's not because the family itself is better than the first one, but because they understood that there's not as wise as the experienced, that things aren't going to be better or really different. And so they stay. The least of two evils, so to speak. If we're talking about a nation or the government, how they should get along together, their things are much harder. They don't feel that they have any common property. The problem in the government, for example, is that they need to build a group that leads the country, and they don't exactly feel that the country is their property. Today it's mine, tomorrow it's his. I don't really care about what I'm leaving for him, on the one hand. On the other hand, I have just one problem, to show everyone that I'm right and that I'm good. So the more the nation, the more that country suffers because of the other person, the better it is for me. Meaning I don't take into consideration what's good or bad for the country or the nation, but what's good for me. And even if it's to the detriment of the country and the nation, but if by it, I show that I'm greater than that prime minister or president or leader or whoever, that if in his term things got worse for the people, for the country, and with great losses and everything, then I'm content. Meaning it's really, really different usually than how it is in a family, because a family has property and children and things, and there, one way or another, we somehow continue to be interdependent. If you have your children and property and a home, and it's not simple to play at the expense of each other. Therefore, the difference is vast. And as if it's much easier to take care of a family. There, the damage is personal. Whereas the government doesn't have these kinds of problems, and therefore there we can really go wild. And what happens? To this day we still remember the Antalena and all the problems that we had back then, even though so much time went by already. And the way we accepted immigrants from different countries, and how it was all controlled by the ego of the representatives of the nation in those days. Meaning here the calculation is much cruder, more egoistic, false, that you have no court that can discuss these matters and say which of the couple is wrong, which isn't, and how to divide the roles and property between them and so on. It's a problem. So, if suppose we're talking about the attitude of, suppose, some of the parties about how they manage the country, I wouldn't allow any of the parties to manage. Because really, we never saw that there's any party of peace. Because none of them was brought up correctly to be that way. To see the nation as one, the country as one, the benefit and well-being of the country above everything, and can even concede his position, respect, and everything that comes with it. And he's not yelling, "Let me lead, let me drive, give me the wheel," like little children that want to hold the wheel. And so that's the problem. Not only here, only that here, we're all the time in a critical situation. We're always on the borderline between existing and not existing, succeeding or, God forbid, who knows what. And therefore, from what I understand, according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, not according to my own nature, but according to what I learn from the wisdom of Kabbalah, we have no chance of succeeding but under a national unity government. But a national unity government consisting of those that really want unity, that are capable of it, that are capable of concessions, like in family life, that each and every family is all in all concessions, that everyone concedes something, annulling him or herself toward the other person. So, a national unity government is one that includes many opposite forces, opposing forces, and it's a must. It's not one party, that's not good, because then they pull the entire nation and the entire country in a certain direction, and it always arises discontent in the nation. And we already saw how the socialists that ran the country until 1977 or 8, I think, until the Likud party came to power for the first time, what they did, what they wanted, and how they built here everything, the HMO and the banks and the labor union and so on, that afterwards it was hard to somehow bring it to balance with the other forces. I think that actually several strong parties should participate in this, that are really different, not just that they have different names. Unfortunately, I don't see strong parties that are different. Today you have Kahol Lavan and Likud, these two parties. I don't think that anyone understands what's the difference. The difference is that here, Netanyahu wants to rule, and there Gantz wants to rule, together with Lapid and maybe someone else. So all in all, It's a matter of a leader that thinks that he knows how to manage things and he really wants to. So it's not exactly what I'm talking about. A good, proper government is one that consists of opposite forces, and they know how to connect with one another and how to get out of the oppositeness the good, correct results in each and every moment and for every question. This is called a national unity government, that the unity is that they want to the benefit of the country. And there are disputes, differences in opinion, and different things, of course. But everyone understands that only by the spirit of unity will they be able to do something good for the state and for the people. Therefore, a national unity government is one that is in, that consists of opposite forces that know and understand, that are wise enough to manage themselves toward unity. And not to delude ourselves that one party can properly run the country. It's not good. But actually several opposite parties that along with it also know how to reach unity, connection. How does such a government work? What does it think? What does it feel? What goes on there? How does it work? Well, it's also like in a family, that you have two people, that maybe each of them thinks differently, but because they have a common goal, then they have to discuss each and every detail of that goal and to see how can they reach a preferable result for both, by the one, by the other, and maybe by both, that there are concessions, completion, but this is how they work. This is what they work on daily. And how do you deal with serious ideological gaps? Today, no party has any ideology. There's only the matter of how to destroy the other and control everything. That's the ideology. It's not like in the past that you had ideologists and parties that had a certain philosophy about life, a certain perception. Today you don't have that. Today it's only about money and power. Crony capitalism, that's it. I want to add another aspect. Up until now, we talked about the leadership, the government itself. But there's also the public. If, at some point, in Israel or in any other place, truly a national unity government will come to power that consists of opposing views, that they rise above in concession, what spirit will it bring? That everything is to the benefit of the nation and the country, that everything is to their benefit, that they really come to serve and not to succeed and rule and build something special for each of them. And suppose they really did connect into one government the way you mean it, and they're really concerned with the general interest of the country and the public, like in a family. And really there's the spirit of concession and everything. What's transmitted? What kind of energy or how is it absorbed by the public? What will it do to us as a society? We will feel that they are working to our benefit. We will feel that someone cares for us. We'll get an explanation about why are they doing things one way or another. We as a nation need for the government to come and give account for what it does, and that it's to the benefit of the people and the country, children, women, families, and so on. I want to clearly know this. Otherwise, what are they there for? To share the cake between them. The disunity that exists in the leadership also exists in the nation. Will it somehow affect the general spirit of the nation? Will the nation become less disputed as a result of the leadership being more united? Of course, the nation will take an example from the government. How complete strangers that even oppose each other, that are even hostile toward one another, how they rise above that for the sake of a better solution for their common property, which is the country. Does it really have such a strong impact? Because many say that the leadership is corrupt, bad, so the nation actually imitates what happens there. And there is a perception that says that, no, we all behave the same way, the public and the government. Yeah, but we see that nothing good can come from that. Nothing good comes from their egoistic, short-sighted behavior, neither for the people, for the country, for any family, for no one. Why should we even think about that? We're supposed to get an example from our so-called leaders as to how should we behave among us. You're saying that this example from the leadership will permeate to the public. They have to explain it all the time. Why are they doing things one way or another, these laws and not those? They have to set an example for the right behavior for the public. Our time's almost up. Still, if you can summarize what you taught us up until now, a leadership in the spirit of connection, what is there about it? There are opposing forces there that, one way or another, their goal is the well-being of the country and the public, and in favor of that, they act, work together. And in their mutual concessions, maybe they see different means and a different state at the end, but this is what they discuss all the time, and only through completion, mutuality, can they reach the right result. We wish. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.